Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome back, everybody. Guest today, Chef Chu. Chef, please tell us where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with Chef Chu's Kitchen.
Hey, man. Well, it's good to be here. I'm actually based in Vallejo, California. And awesome. we just excited to be a part of it, man. Yes, sir.
Hey, man. Happy to have you on. I really appreciate it. And Nick, can you tell us a little bit about your background? I mean, I can see, obviously, from the website, you're doing, I can see the plant-based fried chicken fillets, the shredded steaks. So tell me a little bit about your background, how you got into this plant-based side of culinary stuff.
Yeah, man. So I got the coolest last name. My real last name is actually Chu. So that's not a made up name. So
you were made for this.
Hey, made for this, man. So I like to say, as I always say, going to give you something to chew on. And so, yeah, man. So crazy enough, even more powerful, I was adopted into a black family that had the last name Chu, which is kind of a unique name for a black family. But all that to say, man, I grew up in the South. My family were heavy meat eaters. So I grew up eating everything from, the traditional fried chicken, ribs, the pork chops, the ham. My daddy was a country boy, man, so he ate squirrel and ate off the land and all that type of stuff, man. So what was ironic, my mother's family were actually vegetarians, and so they were happen to be Seventh Adventists, which are known for being vegetarians, some of the longest living people in the world. But based on their faith perspective, I would go to my family's house, my mother's side, and they had vegetarian food. And so all throughout my childhood, I would get exposed to vegetarian food in the 80s and the 90s. That led to me personally making a decision in 2001. I personally became a Seventh Adventist and also became vegan at the time. And that started my personal journey as a vegan, plant-based. At that time, I don't know how much you're familiar with plant-based foods and the history of plant-based foods, but veganism, wasn't as popular. Vegetarianism, during the 80s, 90s, it's been around for a long time. But in early 2000, there wasn't a lot of vegan options, nothing like we see today, right? So a lot of the food tasted horrible. And me growing up eating all that delicious Southern food, the fried chicken and the mac and cheese, I wanted to replicate the things that I grew up eating. So that kind of started my curious journey, and really not really becoming a chef per se, but just a hobby, just that always in the kitchen, experimenting, taking cookbooks and making recipes. That became like my passion, man. And I spent from the age of like 18, 19, for like the next 7 to 10 years, man, just going crazy in the kitchen, like on a consistent daily basis, to the point where I was pretty much started my first products like my early 20s. So I started making granola, making fresh breads, and experimenting with veggie meats. And at that time, we called them veggie meats at the time, so taking like...
That's pretty early on for that kind of stuff. You're pretty ahead of the times with that, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. So, back then they had oat burgers and gluten-type recipes, old school gluten stuff. And I was taking, tofu obviously was out around, and tempeh, but I focused a lot on gluten at the time. I'm just taking like dough formulations and making different products. I eventually got into, looking at beans and strategically learned a lot about how to, take different types of beans and create texture with them. So I literally, man, in 2006, 2007, I had my first kind of trade secret that I kind of developed, a texturization process that kind of became the foundation of my entire company. And we'll talk more about that as we continue, but that became the foundation. That led to 2008, started my first vegan restaurant in 2008, and had 4 restaurants since then, and got into the manufacturing industry in 2016, 2017. So kind of a, overview, but it's been a journey nonetheless, man.
Yeah, that's an awesome story. I mean, what a great way to get feedback on some of these recipes they're working on and having those restaurants before you go on the manufacturing route. It's like, yes, almost like the perfect storm of stuff, right? So yeah, I guess tell me, I mean, one of the things that stood out to me when I was looking at the website is the amount of protein in these things. I mean, for these bags, they don't look like really massive bags. I mean, they look like pretty big, but for 13 grams of protein per serving, I mean, that's pretty high for something that's plant-based, I would say. So can you tell me a little bit about these recipes? Yeah.
So what we developed, man, I guess our claim to fame is a texturization platform. So normally in the industry and plant-based, most products are made from a process called high moisture wet extrusion. We actually which creates, I like to kind of compare it to a vertical kind of mozzarella, kind of stringier kind of texture.
Okay.
So like, if you think about, you know, an extruder, it's kind of going through like these extruders, you know, that has like almost like holes that, you know, the product comes out like more like a mozzarella stick almost. So you can kind of think about, it's like stringy kind of pulled down. Our product is actually, rather than being vertical, like a mozzarella stick, it's more like a croissant. So it's like it peels on itself. So we kind of create those layers of protein. So we make that layer of muscle like meat experience. And so literally our product peels on itself. So it's like literally this, you know, a technical, not really a technical term, but just imagine a croissant, which has like all, you know, infinite amounts of layers of, you know, this dough kind of stacked on itself. We have the protein that we kind of, you know, create this coagulation process to really kind of create that texture. And so there's a technique that we've developed, man, and it literally concentrates the protein. And like I said, you're getting, you know, on a, you know, on an 8 ounce, you know, I'm sorry, a 3 ounce serving, you know, I think most of our products, at least 12 to 15 grams of protein per serving. And we have different products from the shredded steak to the, our fried chicken. So we do like in our product, we kind of create like this horizontal slab of meat, and then we can cut it into a tender shape, a nugget shape, a fillet shape, or we can shred it. So we can take like our beef texture and shred it into a shredded steak. My newest development, what we're hoping to launch late fall, is going to be literally a full ribeye steak. Can you imagine?
Oh, nice.
6 inch knife and fork, literally ribeye steak that we're working on. So that's going to be our newest development. We have already developed a prototype, kind of figuring out the packaging processes. But the product is just, it gives that meaty, but it's super clean. So even though, like, for example, a lot of our competitors, many times people always argue about ingredient decks. You know, this, you know, one thing we pride ourselves on is that we have a very clean ingredient deck made from non-GMO soybeans. We use organic oils, organic spices. So very simple, clean ingredients, only 5 key ingredients with the, you know, the simple seasonings to kind of give flavor. But the core ingredients are using is a non-GMO soybean that we're using for our main kind of driving for our protein. So that's how we do it.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I know, you know, so some of the feedback I get from people trying like plant-based foods is, you know, going down the route, especially with making them into, you know, kind of like real meat substitutes and things like this. Sometimes they're like, you know, kind of like went all the way past like the organic ingredients almost to like even more synthetic ingredients than what you find in like a typical meat with additives and things. So I think that that's definitely a concern for people. I think these days, like looking at plant-based options if they are a vegan. So it's great to hear. That's obviously, you know, something you should do if you can. It sounds like you figured it out. So that's pretty awesome. And but tell me a little bit about, I guess, how you selling this stuff. I mean, what are your kind of like revenue channels look like? Are you selling into like food service at all? Are you doing more direct to consumer? Are you selling wholesale? What's kind of the general, you know, makeup of this here?
Yeah. So we took a really strategic approach in our growth. We didn't really go crazy just on just seeking after any customer. We really wanted to get proof of concept. So we spent the last literally 3 to 4 years to get proof of concept, growing slow, learning the manufacturing process. And so we started out in Whole Foods kind of out the gate, which was amazing. For most companies, you know, they're striving to get into Whole Foods, right? So we were fortunate to get involved early with Whole Foods in our manufacturing history. So in 2019 almost, 2020, we launched in Whole Foods. And we were able to kind of start in a small region in California. And so we're in grocery. We're in about maybe 300 grocery stores. Nothing crazy right now. You know, and the reason why we haven't grown as much is simply because we self-manufacture. We actually are, you know, since we have a really unique platform, we wanted to really master our manufacturing processes. And so we're in grocery, you know, everything from Whole Foods to a bunch of natural co-ops. And now we're expanding aggressively into new stores coming up in 2024, 2025. We also do food service, which is a core. I'm being a chef coming from the restaurant industry. We service a number of restaurants, still have a good customer base with restaurants. Also, we do K-12 school districts, which is really, really exciting. So that's been a big customer portfolio that we've been growing aggressively as well. So we have about 5 school districts that's been working with us hand in hand. We're on menus weekly at different school districts, you know, in California. And right now we're going into some government opportunities, military opportunities and stuff like that. So we're kind of growing into institutional opportunities as well. So kind of expanding. And lastly, small D2C has been kind of a small play for us. You know, we do that where, you know, we're not nationwide. Customers that want to get access to the product, we can just ship right to them. So, you know, that's kind of been a place. So, you know, again, so grocery, food service, Growing into institutional is kind of going to be a next phase, and then D2C on a really small scale. Our focal point is going to be really heavy focusing on building a solid food service with our K-12, and strategically going into select grocers that makes sense. It's kind of going to be our next phase of our business.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I feel like things like that with like new government contracting for like food suppliers is not, it's not a vertical I think enough people try to get into. And I do have a lot of CPG people come on the podcast and just like have conversations. And it's not something I hear about a lot. So what kind of sparked your interest in like wanting to go down that route? Is this something that somebody approached you with? Or I mean, how'd you kind of get involved with that side of things?
Yeah, man. So it's kind of been, like you said, it's been more or less networking. It's kind of sometimes the craziest people you meet somewhere is now in that industry. And now that kind of opens up an opportunity. So like K-12, for example, I just honestly, I did a podcast like this, another podcast, a local podcast in my region. And one of the food service directors heard the podcast and he was like, I want to get your product in my school district. You know what I mean? It was
Oh,
like
that's
something
awesome.
very random. So, success to the podcasters, right? And so that was kind of how I started my journey. And he opened up some doors with his colleagues, other food service directors in the area. And that just started, man, an opportunity, man, for my name to get out there. It's slow. That's the other side about institutional, school districts, any type of government. It's a really slow process. But once you get in, you're kind of in. I mean, once you're on the school menu, unless you just mess up, you're on the menu for the entire year. And so we really been focusing on really trying to build it. Sometimes the margins aren't as great depending on what level you're in. So obviously, if you're selling to the United States, let's say, for example, a military, contract type, that's more commodity based opposed to, in a school district, it's still commodity based, but, in California at least, we can kind of sell a little bit higher than we can for other contracts that may be similar. So it just depends on who you're selling to, the distribution channels. But I definitely recommend if your product, like I say, a protein is something that's needed by a school district. They have students that are vegans and vegetarians that need vegan options. And so if you have, if other CPG companies have products that can fit in that, I would definitely recommend, looking into those opportunities, man, because it's huge and it's really good margin, consistent income, margin, healthy margin. Consistent income compared to the grocery industry, which has all the temporary price reductions, all the extra stuff you got to spend, that you just got to deal with in the grocery business. And so it's a really good way to get a good revenue stream in.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I would say most of our listeners are, other entrepreneurs and most of the other guests that come on. I would say we're pretty big in CPG as far as people that come on the podcast. So seriously, anybody listening, this is a great opportunity, I think. If you haven't considered this or I don't know how easy it would be to maybe do like cold outreaching to local schools and stuff. But I mean, if you know anybody and have those connections in any way, I mean, it's such a great idea because I mean, there's such high volume too. Obviously, especially school districts and where you are in California, I assume it's probably larger school districts where you are. So yeah, you
Absolutely.
do good volume there. That's awesome. I love that. It's actually the first time I've ever heard of somebody doing that. Anybody that's came on. So yeah, congrats to you on that. It's very savvy and scrappy. I like that.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, honestly, that's been our story. We wasn't, one thing I will say, if you kind of study our industry, the plant-based, it was a very big focus on going venture capital when it comes to food. And a lot of companies, some stories, there's a few success stories, but a lot of heartache for a lot of different founders that went in that road. And this, I just feel like, when it comes to food businesses, it's a slower grind. You can't really rush the process in a food business. You got to build manufacturing, you got to get right people. And it just takes time to really get all those pieces in place. And so you really got to be patient with the growth. And it's not something you can just rapid, fire to get to billions of dollars or millions of dollars overnight. It just takes time to get there.
Yes, fair enough. And I've heard that from a few other folks that have come on, just saying basically like people have made mistakes saying like they got like into a big retailer because it was a great deal and it was like more than they ever wanted, but they just realized that like the place that they were in actually wasn't really a great fit for their brand, and they ended up pulling out of it because they just found out that it just wasn't jiving with their brand, the retailer that they were in, and it set them back quite they said quite a few years, and they said that they were happy that they did that for like the ongoing future of the brand. But I've definitely heard that advice before too. I think that's definitely a shared experience. I mean, it's a slow burn, and you got to think about how your product exists and all the avenues that you're in. And if it's not a good fit, even if somebody's offering you the money, it might not always be a good fit. So no, I think that's really good advice. And I know you mentioned you started in in grocery in 2020. That's like right in the middle of COVID, it seems.
Yeah,
That's very interesting. So, can you tell me a
was a
little bit about how
crazy
that
time.
experience was? Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't seen at least the numbers that far as this, like, velocity was just insane during COVID. I think people were just buying food and just eating good at home, man. It was a crazy time. But we started, like I say, we started in 2019, July, and so COVID hit 2020. And like I said, when we got into COVID hit, man, I mean, things, like I said, our velocity was insane. We've never seen, I mean, this. I mean, I think like Whole Foods, for example, is having their best years ever. Like they was hitting company records since during that season, and but like we
Really?
was having like 2 or 3 times velocity, at least in our category. So that was a really so like in plant-based, people started like a lot of the excitement came during COVID. If you think about plant-based, I think Beyond might have went public during COVID, if I'm not mistaken. But it was like
Think you're right, yeah.
so much excitement because it was such an emphasis on people just buying food. Like the food category went up crazy, during that time. And obviously, COVID was a storm for like people wanting to get healthier. If you think about it, people wanted to like, hey, not only did, whether you argue about vaccines or whatever, but people still wanted to eat more clean just because they wanted their immune systems to be healthier. So veganism was a really popular thing during that time. So I think we just kind of had that excitement. Everything synergized. The science was hitting hard. The documentaries was coming out, like What the Health and some of these crazy documentaries on Netflix was coming. And just everything was a perfect storm. People were home watching it, getting information that they didn't ever hear before. So it was just all of that combined. And it just led to a perfect storm of this category explosion. And so that was the COVID, man. It was just a great time, in the space. Money was wild. People was investing a bunch of capital at that time. Again, mostly VC kind of driven at the time. We went a little different path, which was really amazing for us, which I'm really grateful that we did. But it was just a great time, I think, this for the industry, at least in plant-based, specifically.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm curious. I mean, I don't know how it was in California maybe during that time, but in New York, like even a lot of grocery stores were like closed for a while during COVID. So was this like we were selling in Whole Foods through like online with them, or if this
Now
was
nah, they
like
was the
still
open
straight out of
man.
the store? They were just
Yeah,
open the whole
they
time.
were. To my understanding, yeah, I mean, we was shipping product, man. So because central business was still open, but it was still. I don't remember. I mean, I don't remember like having to do like a online shopping. It was like I'm sure people were doing online shopping. I'm sure that was like insane as well. But people were going to. I mean, I had a restaurant in COVID during COVID. So I mean, we actually had our best months during COVID. Kind of as crazy as that sounds.
It
I
is
mean,
crazy, yeah.
because also for me being a black-owned product too. You remember that was also during the George Floyd time. So being black-owned, the COVID hit, like all those synergies kind of ran into each other. At least for me as a minority, and so we saw like. I mean, restaurant sales went insane. And then people were just literally outside the shop, didn't go in, were just getting food. Like, we just had insane days, man. Like, especially, I remember May. I don't know what George Floyd thing happened, May 21 or May 2020. I forget the time frame, but it was insane, man. Some insane days, I remember it.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I remember I was actually working in restaurants at that time too. I was working at a diner in upstate New York, and these guys, the owners, literally bashed out a side of the wall and made a drive-through because we could only do takeout. It was the craziest thing. I showed up like second day, like after COVID hit, and they were like, "It's gonna be like McDonald's. You're gonna have a big menu board. People are just gonna pick up their takeout orders. It's gonna be a drive-through. It's gonna be here forever." I was like, "Okay,
Man,
that's
that's
cool.
it.
That's awesome."
Hey, if anything kind of went too, man, the city was a little bit more, what's the word? Working with businesses where they wouldn't let you get like an outside place to eat, in the city. Now they would let a lot of stuff kind of was able to kind of go through that wouldn't typically. So,
And it's really interesting how much of that stuff kind of stuck, at least in New York. I know, like, we never did take out alcoholic beverages, sealed, nothing ever in New York. And
got
then
you.
COVID hit, and the Tavern Owners Association in New York was like, "We are all going to fail if you don't allow us to do this." And it was so big that they basically lobbied like the state government to allow that. And it's still going on now. And like you said, in the city, they turned like basically all the property on the sidewalk right outside most restaurants to be able to have seating. And like, it's just like all these things came out of it that have just stuck because they were just such like, good and novel ideas that like were not allowed before. So yeah, it was very interesting, obviously interesting time, but you take a positive spin on a lot of really interesting things came out of it that seemed to stick and have still been successful to this day. So yeah, it's fascinating. And let me ask you this. I'm curious, I guess, when you think about, who you're kind of, I know it's kind of hard to tell when you're doing, mostly retail. You don't always get all the data, but what do you kind of see as your like ideal customer? Is it somebody who is already vegan, who is looking for like meat alternative options, or are you trying to kind of market this as more of like a to everybody, as somebody who maybe isn't even necessarily a vegan and wants to like try something maybe closer to what they know, and trying to maybe add more vegan options to their diet? How do you kind of see that in your like general like marketing message?
It's twofold. I mean, I think you want to provide products to people that are already vegans, vegetarians that want a clean, delicious product. I mean, there's a, you know, I've been a vegan for 20 plus years, and you just, you know, it's a customer base that just says, hey, I'm a, you know, I want to eat healthy, but I also, you know, I do eat plant-based meat. Some people, there's a world out there that's like plant-based meat is not good if you're a vegan. You know, there's a world for that, but you know, not that world. People that want a clean, plant-based product that allows them to kind of recreate some of the things they grew up eating that they, or they, you know, they want to experience. So we cater to that, but then we also, on a missional level, we always say our mission as a company is plant-based foods for everyone. We want to democratize the access of plant-based, you know, foods, you know, where, you know, it not only is this accessible, affordable, but it tastes good, you know. And so we want that flexitarian, that person that's saying, hey, you know, I want to go plant-based, but I'm the other stuff I've tasted didn't really taste that, wasn't that satisfying. We want to give them that true, like, really, like, you can make a cheesesteak, you know, you can have a true fried chicken experience, you know, at home, you know, and enjoy it, right? A ribeye steak, you know, I was a steak eater, but now I can have, it's not steak, you know, I'm not gonna act like it's a real piece of ribeye steak, you know, that you cook on the grill, but it's still satisfying enough where it's like the doctor told you and said, look, bro, you can't be eating no more red meat like that. You need to literally cut that stuff out. Like, that's not good. They can get a good product, you know, that can really help them feel good. And so, you know, a lot of our, I think this, my background story coming from a community, you know, that had a lot of disease, you know, and wanting to help people to transition to healthier options and still be able to experience some of those cultural iconic items that they grew up eating. You know, that's a big part of who we want to focus on. And lastly, it's finding, I guess we like to call them the chief health officer, you know, whether it's the mom or the dad that cooks for the family, you know, they want to be able to provide their kids with this good, healthy, good food that a kid would eat, you know what I mean? You know, so like having a taco night and it's delicious, you know, having the chicken tenders, you know, and the kids can really enjoy it. You know, being able to have a chicken sandwich and the kids can just be like, man, I can eat this chicken sandwich and this is like, I'm not missing anything. That's the type of customer that we're hoping to really, you know, meet and meet really well and do a good job at it.
Yeah, I love that term flexitarian. I kind of find myself in that category where I'm always looking for good, like plant-based options to kind of subsidize like the things that I'm eating, because I grew up same way. I mean, we had like a regimen growing up. We had like chicken and pasta on Mondays, pork chops on Tuesdays, steaks on Wednesdays, burgers Thursday, pizza Friday,
There you go.
in school and at home even, I felt like. So no, that's really interesting. And yeah, I think there's a lot of more, I think there's a big market of people out there. I feel like it's not as much of a dichotomy as it's made out to be in the public eye, where there's like, you know, people who like to eat plant-based and people who don't. I think there's a lot of people who are definitely very curious about trying and like, you know, seeing what options are out there to, you know, that do taste good. Because I think that's one of the biggest reasons people are like not willing to try maybe some plant-based things is they've probably tried something in the past that maybe they didn't like. I don't happen to fall in that category. I actually happen to like most of the plant-based things that I've tried, whether they're all like meat alternatives or whether they're you know, whatever it is. But I love that term though, flexitarian. I can't believe I've never heard anybody say that before. But no, I think it's a perfect description of a lot of people. And so where do you find is kind of like the biggest, like, you know, obviously on a mission basis, like for sure, I definitely see that vision. And do you have any feedback to support, like, you know, which kind of groups of people are like, you know, seem to be buying this more, whether it's like, is your ideal customer that is like a plant-based, like vegan eater, or what do you kind of find from that if, based on the data that you have?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, you know, I mean, maybe before the plant-based boom and, you know, people going vegan and so forth, I mean, it was like 1% of the population was like vegan. I want to say now we're at minimum, I want to say it's closer to 12. I don't quote me on that, but I think it's at least 7 or 10, 7 to 10. But I want to say it's up to like 12% people identifying with being vegan. Statistics normally show like 2/3 of the, you know, over half, you know, up to 2/3 are flexitarians trying to reduce their intake of meat. And so that's what drove the industry. You know, I do believe there's people that are like, hey, there's been a growth of vegans, and largely, believe it or not, amongst minority communities, specifically Black community, they had the twice fast, you know, the twice the amount of growth happened within the Black community than any other population group. So you saw a lot of that, you know, that's happened, and I think that largely grew because of this in urban communities, a lot of restaurants, you know, that are, you know, Black owned, you know, vegan restaurant concepts, and this health reasons. I think it was like a really big sore that happened, especially during COVID. I think that was kind of a big thing that you saw. I will say though, and from a grocery standpoint in grocery stores, the flexitarian customers business was driving that sale. You know what I mean? And again, people that's wanting to reduce their meat intake, you know, wanting to be able to just have a plant-based plant-based option, you know, one day a week, 2 days a week, 3 days a week. Some people even do it like, hey, you know, I don't eat meat at home. You know, you only eat meat at, you know, when they're out and about during their day.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense. And so there's a lot of people that do it in different ways as a lifestyle. But I think you're a perfect example. Like, you just want to reduce that meat intake. I'm going to incorporate, you know, plant-based options. So rather than having the burger, you know, I'm going to do the, you know, the Beyond if people did that, or the Impossible doing that, you know, whatever, or, you know, this, whatever one that they like, you know. But that's kind of was the angle of how the market grew, was from that mindset, not really getting people to like come off of meat completely, you know, because, you know, in an idealistic world, you know, we would love for everybody to kind of be plant-based, you know, but we're just not in that reality. And I don't think we can we ever have a world that's going to happen. I don't know. I'm not going to say that that would ever exist unless the people just kind of really see that, you know, from a standpoint of like, you know, the greenhouse gases that meat produces, you know, that it's just the carbon, you know, footprint can be, you know, we can, there's an argument around the environmental standpoint, you know, but sadly, man, people don't change unless like you have to. So unless it's like a death doom sentence, like the world is going to end tomorrow, you know, people are not typically going to just stop doing something. Like if the doctor just says, hey, you're going to die next week if you don't stop eating this, people probably going to still eat what they want to eat. It's just human nature, man. So I feel like unless you get those type of dark sentencings that kind of like come in that fashion, we're going to probably still keep doing certain things unless the government steps in and kind of just mandates it for certain reasons. So that's my take. So as we speak, can we make delicious, healthy foods that taste amazing where people can say, man, reasoning and saying, wow, I can eat this. It's better for the environment, better for my body, you know, better for the animals, you know, whatever driving factor, you know, you're kind of helping people to kind of just do more of it. You know what I mean? And the cheaper, you know, will actually help. And I think also as I would say, lastly, beyond just trying to compete against, do I buy meat or do I buy plant-based? I think there's also very important, we need to do education because that's even more important, is people learning how to just get back to simplicity again. You know, people didn't eat as much meat 100 years ago. You know what I mean? People ate off the land. People grew food. You know, we actually spent time cooking. You know, we didn't eat out as much. You know, we was more intimate with our food. And so I do think there's a necessity of around just getting back to simplicity, you know, of us actually cooking, growing food and some of those things. So there's, you know, that's not going to be the major population, but I think some of those ideologies, you know, and some of those ideals would definitely also be a big play in helping to shift, you know, people and going in that direction.
You know, so true. And I mean, do you provide any kind of like that type of like, you know, education for your consumers, whether it's like, you know, something on the package, or I know a lot of people that do, you know, kind of like vegan alternatives, or if it's like a, you know, a lot of like gluten-free types of things, will have like little QR codes with like information on like, you know, like how like different things can affect you. Have you gone down that route with anything on your packaging or the site or anything like that?
More local, that's something that I'm challenging myself to do more of far as on the packaging. So we're actually rebranding. So most people would know us as Better Chew on shelf. So we actually are actually Better Chew on shelf. We're changing our name to Chef Chew's Kitchen. And so, but historically I've done a lot of education. I'm an avid speaker all over the country, done a lot of cooking education, like in school districts, everything to churches, to communities. I've always done education locally in my restaurants and stuff like that. So I've kind of been a local warrior, like this local hero kind of model. And I think we're at a point now we want to scale that. So that's a really big vision for us, is to scale the educational side of our business, where we actually are doing more education to what you're getting at. So that's a phase two for us. We've done it more regionally, locally, speaking like this on podcasts and a lot of this type of work over the years. But that is a vision that we're hoping to bring to life, man. So, hey, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's really important. And yeah, I just want to give you an opportunity as well, just right before we hop off here, just to let people know, anybody listening, maybe interested in partnering with you, want to find the product, you know, see where they can get it or just order right from you. Let people know how to stay in touch with you guys, whether it's the website, any of your socials, anything you want to shout out for people who might be interested.
Yeah, man. Hey, so I'm excited. We'd love to give you guys something to chew on. Like we said, we got the chicken that looks like chicken, tastes like chicken, but guess what? It ain't chicken. Crispy on the outside and white in the middle. So you can check us out right now. We're actually, we're transitioning to Chef Chew's Kitchen, but right now you can find us at eatbetterchew.com, or on our Instagram handle or Facebook handle at Better Chew. Better Chew, and you can actually get our product. We ship nationwide to your doorstep. We're in Whole Foods everything from all of California, as well as we're going to be launching into New York here in a few weeks. And so you'll be in the New York tri-state area as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to try it. I'll add you on LinkedIn too. Make sure we stay in touch. Definitely let me know when you're launching in New York, whether it's D2C or if you're getting any stores in there. Definitely let me know.
May 2024, man.
Awesome, man. I definitely want to try it. This is, like I said before, yeah. I mean, this is a category I've been kind of going into more, and I kind of easing into it, you know, with like, I've been doing a lot of like vegan snacks lately.
I guess.
With like, just like replacing, you know, my like late night snacks and stuff with like plant-based stuff, and I'm really learning to love it. So I'm looking to get like maybe a couple more feet in to this process to subsidize like more of my diet with these types of things. So yeah, definitely let me know. We'll definitely stay in touch, man. And yeah, I really appreciate your time, brother. Appreciate your time and your insights.
Hey, man. Thanks so much for the podcast, man. Thanks for
having us. Absolutely. Yes, sir. Thanks, man. Thanks, everybody.